When dawn began to brighten the sky, I covered myself with the gray cloak and took the red apples from the silver bowl, one by one, lifting each into my basket with silver tongs, taking care not to touch it. There was nothing left of my blood or of the brown powder in the silver bowl, nothing save a black residue, like a verdigris on the inside. I buried the bowl in the earth. Then I cast a glamour on the apples, as once, years before, by a bridge, I had cast a glamour on myself, that they were, beyond any doubt, the most wonderful apples in the world, and the crimson blush of their skins was the warm color of fresh blood. I pulled the hood of my cloak low over my face, and I took ribbons and pretty hair ornaments with me, placed them above the apples in the reed basket, and I walked alone into the forest until I came to her dwelling, a high sandstone cliff laced with deep caves going back away into the rock wall. There were trees and boulders around the cliff face, and I walked quietly and gently from tree to tree without disturbing a twig or a fallen leaf. Eventually, I found my place to hide, and I waited, and I watched. After some hours, a clutch of dwarves crawled out of the hole in the cave front. Ugly, misshapen, hairy little men, the old inhabitants of this country. You saw them seldom now. They vanished into the wood, and none of them saw me, though one of them stopped to piss against the rock I hid behind. I waited. No more came out.
Hello? Is anybody there? I've got ribbons. Pretty ribbons. And combs.
The scar on my mound of Venus throbbed and pulsed as she came towards me, out of the darkness, naked and alone. She was 13 years of age, my stepdaughter, and nothing marred the perfect whiteness of her skin, save for the livid scar on her left breast, where her heart had been cut from her long since. The insides of her thighs were stained with wet, black filth.
Ribbons, good wife. Pretty ribbons. For your hair.
Come to me.
I dropped my basket and screeched like the bloodless old peddler woman I was pretending to be, and I ran. My gray cloak was the color of the forest, and I was fast. She did not catch me. I made my way back to the palace. I did not see it. Let us imagine, though, the girl returning, frustrated and hungry, to her cave, and finding my fallen basket on the ground. What did she do? I like to think she played first with the ribbons, twined them into her raven hair, looped them around her pale neck or her tiny waist. And then, curious, she moved the cloth to see what else was in the basket, and she saw the red, red apples. They smelled like fresh apples, of course, and they also smelled of blood. And she was hungry. I imagine her picking up an apple, pressing it against her cheek, feeling the cold smoothness of it against her skin. And she opened her mouth and bit deep into it. By the time I reached my chambers, the heart that hung from the roof beam, with the apples and hams and the dried sausages, had ceased to beat. It hung there, quietly, without motion or life, and I felt safe once more. That winter the snows were high and deep and were late melting. We were all hungry come the spring. The spring fair was slightly improved that year. The forest folk were few, but they were there, and there were travelers from the lands beyond the forest.
Well?
Better, Your Majesty, better.
Over there, the forest folk, those dwarf things. What are they doing?
what they've been doing this whole market. Buying glass. All the glass they can get. Paying good money for it, too.
I saw the little hairy men of the forest cave buying and bargaining for pieces of glass and lumps of crystal and of clear quartz. They paid for the glass with silver coins, spoils of my stepdaughter's depredations, I had no doubt. When it got about what they were buying, townsfolk rushed back to their homes, came back with their lucky crystals, and, in a few cases, with whole sheets of glass. I thought briefly about having the dwarves killed, but I did not. As long as the heart hung, silent and immobile and cold, from the beam of my chamber, I was safe, and so were the folk of the forest, and thus, eventually, the folk of the town. My stepdaughter had eaten the poisoned fruit 2 winters back when the prince came to my palace.
Do you know who he is, Majesty?
From his coat of arms, he's prince of the land beyond the mountains.
He's very handsome.
Yes, he is.
In traveling, the challenge of choosing a retinue is that it need be large enough to defend oneself in case of, well, bandits, let us say, but small enough that another monarch, well, yourself, for example, would not see it as any kind of a threat.
No threat at all?
Certainly not to you, Majesty.
How very charming. And what would you say, Your Highness, would be the purpose of all your peregrinations?
I travel to make alliances. I am looking for allies with other monarchs and other kingdoms.
Alliances. I was practical. I thought of the alliance of our lands, thought of the kingdom running from the forests all the way south to the sea. I thought of my golden-haired, bearded love dead these 8 years. And in the night, I went to the prince's room. I am no innocent, although my late husband, who was once my king, was truly my first lover, no matter what they say.
Yes? My, a visitor, and such a damn pretty one.
Thank you.
No, don't come any closer.
I thought you wanted me.
Oh, I do. I want you to do what I tell you. Do you understand?
As you wish.
Take off your robe. Let it fall. Good. You are very beautiful. Now, walk over to the open window.
It's cold.
And do not say another word. Stand there until your skin is chilled and cold.
I am chilled, Your Highness.
Come here. Lie on your back. Good. Now, fold your hands across your breast. Like this. No. Keep your eyes open. But do not look at me. Look up at the beams. Now, you must not move. Breathe as little as possible. No, don't move. Let me open your legs. Oh, yes. Don't say anything. Do not make a sound.
I could not help moaning. It had been so long.
No! Damn you!
His manhood slid out of me. I reached out and touched it, a tiny, slippery thing.
What's wrong?
I told you. You must neither move nor speak. Just lie there on the stones. So cold and so fair.
I did my best, but he had lost whatever force it was that had made him virile. And, some short while later, I left the prince's room, his tears and curses still resounding in my ears.
You evil witch!
monstrous, evil, lustful creature!
So, how was he, Majesty?
Charming. But he... He does not like live women.
Do you think they will ever come back?
No, Jenna. He won't be back. He left early the next morning with all his men, and they rode off into the forest. And what happened next? I do not know, but I can guess. I imagine his loins now as he rode, a knot of frustration at the base of his manhood. I imagine his pale lips pressed so tightly together. Then I imagine his little troop riding through the forest, finally coming upon the glass and crystal cairn of my stepdaughter, so pale, so cold, naked beneath the glass, and little more than a girl, and dead.
Oh, yes.
In my fancy, I can almost feel the sudden hardness of his manhood inside his breeches, envision the lust that took him then, the prayers he muttered beneath his breath in thanks for his good fortune. I imagine him negotiating with the little hairy men, offering them gold and spices for the lovely corpse under the crystal mound.
I want her. I want her now.
Did they take his gold willingly? Or did they look up to see his men on their horses, with their sharp swords and their spears, and realize they had no alternative? I do not know. I was not there. I was not scrying. I can only imagine. Hands pulling off the lumps of glass and quartz from her cold body. Hands gently caressing her cold cheek. Moving her cold arm, rejoicing to find the corpse still fresh and pliable. Did he take her there, in front of them all? Or did he have her carried to a secluded nook before he mounted her? I cannot say. Did he shake the apple from her throat? Or did her eyes slowly open as he pounded into her cold body? Did her mouth open, those red lips part, those sharp yellow teeth close on his swarthy neck as the blood, which is the life, trickled down her throat, washing down and away the lump of apple, my own, my poison? I imagine. I do not know. This I do know. I was woken in the night by her heart pulsing and beating once more. Salt blood dripped onto my face from above. I sat up. My hand burned and pounded as if I had hit the base of my thumb with a rock.
Open the door! Open up!
There was a hammering on the door. I felt afraid, but I am a queen, and I do not show fear. I opened the door. First, his men walked into my chamber and stood around me with their sharp swords and their long spears. Then he came in, and he spat in my face.
There, you old witch.
Finally, she walked into my chamber, as she had when I was first a queen, and she was a child of six.
Hello, stepmother.
Hello, stepdaughter. You have not changed.
Thank you, stepmother. Neither have you.
She pulled down the twine on which her heart was hanging. She pulled off the dried rowan berries, one by one, pulled off the garlic bulb, now a dried thing after all these years. Then she took up her own, her pumping heart, a small thing, no larger than that of a nanny goat or a she-bear, as it brimmed and pumped its blood into her hand. Her fingernails must have been as sharp as glass. She opened her breast with them, running them over the purple scar. Her chest gaped, suddenly open and bloodless. She licked her heart once, as the blood ran over her hands, and she pushed the heart deep into her breast. I saw her do it. I saw her close the flesh of her breast once more. I saw the purple scar begin to fade.
My darling, are you...
He put his arm around her nonetheless, and they stood side by side, and they waited.
You're still very cold.
Yes, very cold.
And the bloom of death remained on her lips, and his lust was not diminished in any way. So, you've made your alliance, then?
Our joint kingdom will stretch from the mountains all the way to the sea. I fancy we will marry at the midwinter feast.
And you will be with us, stepmother, on our wedding day.
They told me that I would be with them on their wedding day. It is starting to get hot in here. They have told the people bad things about me. A little truth to add savor to the dish, but mixed with many lies. I was bound and kept in a tiny stone cell deep beneath the palace, and I remained there through the autumn. Today, they fetched me out of the cell. They stripped the rags from me and washed the filth from me. And then they shaved my head and my loins, and they rubbed my skin with goose grease. The snow was falling as they carried me, two men at each arm, two men at each leg. Utterly exposed and spread-eagled and cold through the midwinter crowds, and brought me to this kiln.
Into the kiln with the old monster!
Goodbye, stepmother.
My stepdaughter stood there with her prince. She watched me in my indignity, but she said nothing more. As they thrust me inside here, jeering and chafing as they did so, I saw one snowflake land upon her white cheek and remain there without melting. They closed the kiln door behind me. It is getting hotter in here, and outside they are singing and cheering and banging on the sides of the kiln. She was not laughing, or jeering, or talking. She did not sneer at me or turn away. She looked at me, though, and for a moment, I saw myself reflected in her eyes. I will not scream. I will not give them that satisfaction. They will have my body, but my soul and my story are my own and will die with me. The goose grease begins to melt and glisten upon my skin. I shall make no sound at all. I shall think no more of this. I shall think, instead, of the snowflake on her cheek. I think of her hair as black as coal. Her lips more red than blood. Her skin, snow white. Snow.